Hi, and welcome to this edition of the podcast Disability Talks, an Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission perspective. This podcast was created to provide information about disability rights and disability advocacy in the state of Illinois through topic-based interview format. The podcast will be offered quarterly and will cover some of the issues the Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission discovers and confronts in our work with the disability community. The Guardianship and Advocacy Commission is an agency in the Illinois state government. The agency is comprised of three divisions that advocate for disability rights in the states. The divisions are the Office of State Guardian, which provides guardianships as appointed by court for adults with disabilities when no one else is there to serve. Second is Legal Advocacy Services, which provides legal representation for individuals receiving mental health services involuntarily. And finally, we have the Human Rights Authority, which investigates allegations of rights violations against individuals with disabilities by disability service provider. And this is what we will be talking about today. In addition to the work of each division, the Human Rights Authority and Legal Advocacy Services work together to operate the agency's special education initiative. The initiative enables the agency to provide advocacy tools to families and students navigating the special education services in Illinois public schools. We also want to add that while the Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission does offer some legal services, this podcast is about sharing information. We're not giving legal advice here. It's important to know you shouldn't use this podcast as a substitute for professional legal help. As I said before, this episode deals with the Human Rights Authority and volunteerism for the Human Rights Authority. We have three people joining the podcast today, two Human Rights Authority board members and one disability rights manager. And we'll start with Jeremy Polk, who's the disability rights manager. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Jeremy. I am the disability rights manager for the Chicago region. I've been doing this, or I've been established in this position for about 5 years or 5.5 years now. We do have a counterpart of mine. Her name is Alejandra. She does the north side of Chicago, and then I do the west and south sides. And then Geraldine Boatman, she also does the Chicago suburbs. So there's three of us for the Chicago region, and we get along pretty well. And it's been an exciting journey just navigating serving, you know, individuals living with disabilities in the Chicago region.
All right, thanks a lot, Jeremy. Next, we have two Human Rights Authority board members. First, we'll start with Mary Tucker, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
And good morning. I'm Mary Tucker. I am a volunteer member of our local Central Region Human Rights Authority Board, and I've been involved in advocacy for individuals with disabilities for longer than I care to share, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart, and I'm very proud to be an HRA board member, and that's it.
And next we have Dan McCarthy. And Dan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Dan McCarthy, also a volunteer board member in Champaign. And again, it's been advocacy for people with disabilities has been an interest of mine since I can remember. My father was a special ed teacher. He now has late stage Alzheimer's. So I do feel like this is a way that I can carry the torch a little bit for him. So it's a great way to make impact and help support people's rights.
Well, thanks, Dan. Thanks to all three of you for joining us today. We wanted to start with talking about the HRA a little bit. And so I'm going to throw this question to Jeremy. Could you explain a little bit about what the HRA does?
So we investigate rights violation in service facilities, so like medical facilities or actually any facility that provides services to individuals living with disabilities. we are contacted by a potential individual who's either feeling like their services have been restricted or their rights have been violated, we do not solicit complaints. So anyone in the general public can make a complaint, but it has to be a provider agency, and it also has to have an individual living with a disability in that space who rights may have been not followed, for lack of a better term. So we would go to a facility and conduct an investigation to see whether that facility is following all of the rights established by the Illinois Developmental Disabilities and Mental Illness Code, or the Nursing Home Care Act, or the Hospital Licensure Act. So we're just trying to make sure that facilities are doing their due diligence and following the codes and the laws that exist to protect the rights of individuals living with disabilities. So that's exactly what we do. We just conduct investigations in those spheres.
So you brought up disability rights violations. Can you give a few examples of what a rights violation might be?
Well, it's a plethora of them, but the most commonly ones that we interact with are individuals who have gotten forced medications without cause. So legally in Illinois and most places, there's only two ways to give medication. The first way would be that the individual consents for it, right? So there's no reason to give them medication that they haven't consented for. The second way is that if that person is a danger to themselves or others, and they're an imminent threat to do something that is, dangerous, then you can give them forcible medication, provided you fill out a restriction of rights notice, explain to them what's going to happen, and give them a copy of the notice. I did say that there were two ways. There's actually a third. You, as a physician, you can petition the court to give them medication above their objection. So there's only three ways, but that is the typical rights violation that we get called on. There are several others, but I don't want to. But that's the most egregious one that we always get.
Gotcha. So and. You bring up disability service providers too, or you brought that up earlier. Mm-hmm. What are some examples of disability service providers that the HRA would investigate?
Well, our mandate leaves that term vague. So I guess give people an idea, the typical places that I investigate are hospitals, nursing homes, mental health facilities, and most recently, we've done the Chicago Park District, and we've also done stuff at the jail as well. So the term service provider is very vague in our statute. So I assume anybody that provides services to individuals living with disabilities can be considered a service provider.
All right, great. So something that's interesting about the HRA is this is all done through what are called HRA authorities. Can you describe what a HRA authority is, Jeremy?
Well, there are 9 regions in Illinois, and an authority is basically a group of volunteers. As you can see, they're here, and we have 9 of them. For a complete board, you can have less, but generally we have 9, and we can only have 3 provider members on there. So 3 individuals who do direct services can serve on the board, and then the rest of the board has to be lay citizens. And when we meet, we generally meet once every 6 weeks. We go over all of the cases that have been received in that time frame, and then the board votes on whether to accept a case, whether to deny a case. And when they open a case, we contact that facility. And so it's a it's a partnership between a state official, well, I'm not an official, but a state worker and the community in attempting to make sure service providers are providing the best care that they possibly can to individuals who need their services. So it is, you know, collectively run by the community members in that area. Like I have 9 Chicago members and they all live at various spots in Chicago. And then they have various different expertise, but we meet, we discuss the case and, you know, they typically, you know, make the decision on whether to open something or not. It's not predicated on, you know, my want or anything like that. I do help them as I have more expertise in the legal aspect of it, but they make all the decisions and we either enter a facility based on their recommendation or not.
So this is a good segue into talking to one of our board members, but I have one more question for you, Jeremy. Okay. What's the criteria for investigating a complaint? So when somebody calls and makes one, what criteria does the board have to follow?
So one, it has to include an eligible person. So an eligible person is anybody who lives with a disability. It can be mental, it can be developmental, it can be physical. We also consider individuals over the age of 65 as aged disabled. I don't know if that's the perfect way to say it, but we do investigate those kind of cases as well. And it has to include a service provider. So we've already established that service provider is very vague. So those are the two criteria, and it can't be frivolous. So I've had like some complaints about food. I don't necessarily like food in hospitals, and I don't generally think that that's egregious because the food is supposed to be healthy, and I'm not sure if it tastes good because I haven't been in a hospital in a long time, but I do get those kind of complaints like, hey, the food sucks. And I'm like, okay, are they feeding you though? So that happens.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Like I said, it was a perfect segue into talking to the board members. The first thing I want to know, what are some of the duties that you go through as a board member? I think I'll start with asking Mary, what are some of the duties of the board?
Well, just simply you attend your meetings, you volunteer and participate in site meetings or site visits where you go out and you investigate the possible allegation against whatever the service provider is. But I believe more importantly, it's important to be well informed, and there's no way that as a volunteer I would know all of the statutes and all of the codes. So we work pretty as a volunteer board member, I feel that we should work pretty closely with Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission and the managers that are there to help us understand what we're looking at and to be impartial. And quite frankly, it's easy to become interested and really drawn in and try to understand exactly what's going on. And as Jeremy said, you want to differentiate whether it's frivolous. You know, if someone called you a name, sometimes we say, oh, they were very rude. I mean, you really can't sometimes you really can't substantiate those things. So you really want to go to the heart of it and find out, was their right really ignored? Was their rights violation? Really, did it occur? So I think that's really what we need to do is be impartial, be informed, and show up and be involved.
Mary, can you get into how to become an HRA board member a little bit?
Well, as I understand, there's a couple of different ways. You can self-volunteer. You can go online to the State of Illinois website and, click on the appropriate menu with Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission. And then I think there's a drop down on the menu, and go in and read what the HRA is all about. If you feel it's a good fit, then you can fill out a form. You can make a phone call to the local office. You make contact with your local office. All that's provided online. Or in my case, I was nominated. I was asked, hey, would you like to do this? You've been involved in the advocacy area for individuals with disabilities on various levels, you know, birth to three, young adults, et cetera. You know, it's something you might be good at and be interested in. And so then I went through that process where I accepted the request and I filled out the form, sent it on to the board, and the board reviewed it without me being there during the meeting is how we do it. And then if they decide that you're a good candidate, then you come back and you do a quick interview. You know, they ask you some questions. It could take maybe 5-10 minutes and at the board meeting, and then you find out later whether or not you've been accepted and tell you when your first meeting is. You're voted in. That's as I understand the process.
Thanks, Mary. That's great. Great description. I want to jump to Dan and ask him a couple of questions. When you're an HRA member, what's the time commitment like for the volunteerism?
I would say that it can vary. And, you know, you're going to have a board meeting every couple months, and that kind of depends on, you know, how many potential cases they have to look, and if, you know, if they have substantiated issues too, or if we find that there are substantiated issues, you know, as Jeremy and Mary were saying, but it varies. You know, you might review the information within those cases, so that might take a little time. And then, you know, doing site visits for some of these organizations as well. So, you know, a few hours each month, I would say is probably typical, you know, give or take, but that's probably a typical commitment.
So what's your favorite part about being a board member? I hate to put you on the spot, but.
Yeah, I think there's a few. I think number one, I do think that you can see that you make a tangible difference in people's lives. So I think that's number one. You know, you have to be a little careful. Mary was kind of alluding to this a little bit, that sometimes you kind of get swept away in some of the items. But hey, like you're looking at, hey, is this an actual violation or not? And if you're making a difference for a violation, you're definitely making a difference for that person's lives and the people that come after them. So I think that's one. Seeing policy changes that can improve individuals with disabilities. All of these institutions that we're looking at, like, have some sort of governance, you know, whether it's by the state or some organizations, school board, whatever it is, they have some sort of policies. And a lot of times, like, the violation is clear in what they've written. They've already got it. They said, like, hey, this is when we administer medication, or, you know, or this is when we do this. Did you follow what the standard is that you really set for yourself? So, you know, helping not only, you know, for the individuals, but for these organizations, it makes these organizations better places. So, you know, and just collaborating with people that are super passionate about helping people with disabilities and helping them with their rights, I think it's got to be high up on my list. So.
Thanks a lot. I got a couple questions for both of you. First, how long have you been board members?
I had forgotten when the first time I served, and I went back, and apparently 2007 was the first time, and I'm on my third go around. So I think I knew Methuselah.
How about you, Dad?
Not quite as long, 3 years.
Okay. And how do you two think, what are some of the differences between this and other volunteer experiences that you've been a part of?
Dan, I'll go ahead and take that one quickly. And I believe that we actually make a tangible difference, that we work towards best practices with the various providers, and while it can be adversarial sometimes, it generally isn't. You know, we all drop our defenses or preconceived ideas how it's all going to play out, and it's something that you know, we really do strive to improve services, and I just think we become more of a check balance system, you know, for providers. And I think in the long run, while they may not like it at the time because it could mean more work, more trainings, I think in the long run, it makes their job easier because we help them define exactly what is the process for delivering the best service possible. And I would like to add that at the end of the year, our local, I don't know if it's with the whole state, so Dan, you can tell me if that's so, and Jeremy, you can tell me too, but I really enjoy the printout we get at the end of the year of how many cases have been opened by the HRAs and how many, you know, have been resolved and the outcomes and how many individuals that we've represented. I think that is excellent reinforcement, especially for the volunteer boards, to see that we truly are making a difference and we are making an improvement in the systems.
So we do get that information. I've actually never shared it, and I probably should now, because it makes you feel more accomplished now when I think about it, because it is sent to me, and just for not thinking, I didn't think that, you know, the HRA would like to see that, because it's substantial. It'll say like, hey, we served 60,000, you know, patients. It'll say that we opened in Chicago like 66 cases at times, you know, and it would motivate you. Like, it could motivate you. Like, I saw, thanks. I never shared that with my board. I appreciate that.
It's hard to articulate any better than what Mary did, but I'll just kind of play it off. I had some, you know, a couple other board experiences, one with the Fort Wayne, Indiana, Northeast Indiana Urban League. By the way, great organization, fantastic organization, definitely made an impact in the community. They were doing things like putting schools in, you know, having after school programs for kids and stuff like that. And it was fantastic. But the branches here are a little different. Like, you're making impact and having oversight on protection and policy recommendations for multiple organizations. So it is different, and it does have that ability to carry across the state, which is, I think, what is different. You know, the work is different too. You know, it's investigative, it's analytical, obviously advocacy driven. So it's really kind of unique in that way, that you know, your structure is not only just to advocate for these individuals, but you're advocating again for the individuals that are after them, and you're improving these facilities. So I think that's what makes it a little different. And, you know, I'll just add one more thing. So he doesn't know this because I didn't bring it up earlier, but I had reached out to Jeremy a while back, a couple of years ago, when I had a relative in a facility and we were struggling with getting answers as the guardian for this individual. And you know, immediately after calling him and him making a call, like, we got call on resolution. You know, I'm not sure that it was a very big issue, but to have these advocates out there doing this and to be able to use the process myself was interesting too.
That's great firsthand experience. Thanks for sharing, Dan.
That's interesting, because I generally have a good memory. I don't remember this one.
It was just over the phone. It was just via phone call. So, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. I hope I helped. I mean, I hope you're not just saying this for the podcast.
I would never do that. I would never do that. So,
I have one more question for the volunteers. People might be wondering that are listening. What type of supports do you get carrying out this role, like trainings and staff support, those sort of things?
Yeah, there's, you know, we do annual training, I think, for it's like state-run training, but it's pretty thorough, I'll say that. So it does take a little time to get through. And again, what time? In a few hours, you know, so... in varying degrees. And then, you know, we have to certify our training on an annual basis that we've done these things. So I think that's the, you know, like the online or the written training that we're following too. But I would say, like, the biggest thing of training is the support that you get from the staff too. that's kind of the bigger thing and the guidance that you have. Again, I thought it was such a great point that Mary made too, and Jeremy as well, that you know to make sure that this is good complaint to take on, because there's a clear violation of rights here versus, like, again, something that's a little bit more opinionated or something like that. And I think that they drive these boards kind of in the right way and help them with kind of removing the emotion from it and saying, okay, like, where's the violation here in this action? So they do a really good job. But again, I think we have good access to resources and training and staff. So I think those are the big things.
Yeah, and I would just reiterate exactly what Dan had said, is that there's online trainings, the annual, you know, retrainings and certifications. But what I find extremely helpful is that, you know, we can contact anyone, anyone at our local agency, you know, for guidance or clarification, or just to let us know if we're on the right track. And even just something as simple as running a meeting and, you know, what the protocol there is. So it runs the entire gamut. And the wonderful thing about being on the board is that you can learn as much as you want. You know, it's all out there for you, and you're highly supported from the state as well as our local managers and staff. So it's a good place to be.
Well, thanks a lot. It sounds like some glowing reviews.
5 stars, Gene. 5 stars.
All right. Excellent. That's what we want to hear. Well, thanks a lot to Dan and Jeremy and Mary for giving this information about the HRA. And thanks to everybody that's listening. If you have any questions about the HRA, HRA volunteerism, or any other GAC services, go to our website at gac.illinois.gov, or you can call our intake line at 1-866-274-8023. Thanks a lot, everybody, again, and all listeners, thanks, and have a great day.
Thanks. Bye.
See you.